Just kicking off the fifth conversation of the week around the topic of Linux, Windows, and general OS hardening. This is Kyle or Holy Macaroni. This is a part of my cybersecurity community support Catalyst funded project, where I just find a topic every week to discuss, and more importantly, have this. These are open spaces. If anybody wants to join and bring up a topic or mention something or ask something, just to kind of help build security awareness and help continue better tooling people to protect themselves. So I'll give it 5 minutes or so before I start getting into everything. And in the meantime, I will get this shared out, and I'll go on mute. So if you're listening to the recording, just skip about 5 minutes ahead and see if I've started yet or not. Okay, going on mute while I take care of this. Thanks. Yeah, I'm at the 5 minute mark. I'm busy typing, just kind of trying to find the right way to advertise this up there, and tweeting it out. And yeah, so just give me a few more minutes here, and we'll get started. So again, if you're listening to recording, just go ahead and skip a few more minutes, and once you start hearing me rambling on, that is a good time to start listening. I will break this up in a couple of sections. I discuss some overall security, some Linux things, some Windows things, and intermingled in there will be just general security practices you can follow for any system, even Apple, if you're using any other flavor of Linux, so on and so on, right? But yeah, get just a few more minutes. Okay, well, we will go ahead and get started here. Get back to my list of things to cover. Okay, so the first thing I will talk about is something I've talked about. So, the first time I did this space in the week, Michael Leisenfeld or Dr. Leisenfeld joined the space, and he discussed a good topic around hardware, right, in terms of hardening and things to consider about the security of the hardware. When you, I won't go into it in depth at all. I would just go back and listen to the first one of this week. You can find it on my website at epochsec.io. But his general sentiment or overall point was, hardware is often an overlooked thing as well. Every time you whenever you buy a system, pre-built HP, Dell, whatever it is, you don't know th there's a lot that you don't know about the hardware. It's typically closed source. You don't know what's happening with the firmware, etc. I personally use, I have multiple machines, but my main system is from a company called System 76. I'm not advertising them at all. But they create their own derivative of their own flavor of Ubuntu called Pop OS. And one of the main things out of that is their open source firmware, right? So with that being the case, you have a lot more access to that. You know what's going on. You can manipulate things. You have more control. I would, if I were you all, I would listen back to Michael Leisenfeld's 15-20 minute commentary on hardware, and do some research on the hardware, and if you're looking at a laptop, and you're looking at the hardware of it, what CPU it has, what motherboard it has, and stuff. Do some research on that, and dig into some open source things. I'm not sure of another good. Well, he did. He did give another good example of something you could start by looking at to start building your familiarity. There's a company called Purism. They own Librem, which is Librem. Librem, through Librem, they make all sorts of hardware and firmware. I think they sell mobile devices, other types of systems. They make all sorts of hardware, and firmware, like I said, right? All of it, and all of that is open source. So that might be a good place for you to start off with and go check out. And I would say get some familiarity with that and build some questions off of that. And if you want, you can come to myself or Michael. I'm sure he would be happy to answer things. But I will be writing up a document and posting it. And I'll include some of the things that he said so you can go read that actual text and use that as a reference point to go do your own research on that and build some questions and knowledge. That was his thing. He did give a lot of good information again, so I would really, especially if you're a more technical person and you like buying or building custom systems, I would definitely go look into what he had to say. And that's what's great about these spaces. I think throughout the week, each of my spaces had someone join and either share some good knowledge. Lothesen from Drip Drops was also on that call. He shared some great opinions and insights and knowledge. Some of the other spaces that I've had, I had some other community members join as well and share or ask useful things as well. So how to start off? I think most of you all probably have Windows. So I guess I can start off with that this time, and then I'll go over some checklist items for Linux then as well. So first of all, and this apply this goes back to hardware as well, but it applies to all operating systems, and that is disk encryption or whole disk encryption, or is also sometimes called drive encryption. So basically what that is some examples. I think my System 76 Pop OS uses Lux, but something more familiar to everybody on Windows. Every time you buy a Windows machine or install Windows, it also comes with BitLocker. Not enabled by default, but I would highly suggest setting that up. In short, I'll see if I can do this in short. But what's occurring is if you run BitLocker or if you run some other drive encryption or disk encryption or whole disk encryption software, what's happening is it's encrypting the master boot record of the system. When the system powers up the first time, it has to access the master boot record. Once it does that, then it goes through post, and then it can then load the operating system. Okay, so if you have the drive encryption set up, then you have to authenticate to be able to access that MBR master boot record. Okay, so it's creating a cryptographic key pair, And with that, you authenticate to that by some kind of passcode that you'll set up in BitLocker, or again, whatever other application you're using. So you have encryption, you have drive encryption set up, you power on your machine, you go to access that, you have to put in a passcode, and then you get to the Windows log on and or Linux log on, and then you have to put, authenticate with your username and password. Right, so I guess you can kind of consider that like a two-factor authentication method. So the benefits of that are there are two things, and they're related, right? But so imagine if somebody gets your system and they power it on, then they have to authenticate using that passcode to get to for that encrypted MBR. And then only then to load the OS. So before that point, if you can't authenticate to that, the operating system will never load. So what they cannot do at that point is brute force your Windows logon password, because they can't even get to the window. They can't even post Windows. So that's a very good security mechanism right there. Also, if you lose your drive, something like that, or if they steal your drive, and they try to put that into another system, well, it's not going to have that cryptographic key, those cryptographic keys. So therefore, they're not going to be able to, that those cryptographic keys are sitting on the other system related to that MBR. Then basically, that drive is, I guess for maybe an easy way of describing it, it's bricked, right? I mean, it's not usable by them, and they can't load Windows. Therefore, they can't run these forensics tools to, or other tools to try to brute force your password to try to access things on your system or your drive. So I'd really highly, highly, highly suggest setting that up. None of, I make this disclaimer all of the time. No one thing is foolproof. There's a lot of things you could say that where disk encryption lacks at, right? There are ways, if you are sophisticated enough, to try to bypass that, right? But it's not that easy, trust me. But yeah, I mean, that's why, there's a list. That's why there's a list of things to employ and improve your security. It's, there's a phrase in my field called layered security, right? You build upon things and support it. Those a lot of different options you have will support each other. Anyway, off of that tangent, but yeah, that would be the first thing I'd recommend on any system that you have. It's a little less important. Like if you're an enterprise company, you'll notice the laptops will have driver disk encryption. Most of the time, the desktops will not, mainly because those desktops are typically secure. There's physical security to the building. They don't move around like your laptop. You might transport it through airports or through some other public buildings, or you might lose it along whatever travel you're doing. Then somebody gets a hold of that, so it's more susceptible to that than a desktop. But really, it's not that hard to set it up. So, just to be extra sure, you set it up on anything that you have. And just as an example, so what I won't dig into this, but Windows, there's the chipset will use something called TPM. If you want to look that up and ask me about that, you're welcome to. I'm not going to go into that at the moment. But I like to describe encrypting your disks like imagine, think of it like your keypad to disarm your security alarm that lets you into your house. That would be the cryptographic keys. Yeah, just for a simple analogy. One other recommendation is anytime you buy a new system with something, with Windows preloaded, I would suggest not sticking with that. There are a couple of different things that you can do. You can, you can start with a fresh copy of Windows 10. There are partitions on your system, so you have to, I would probably suggest going into that and wiping all the partitions and reinstalling a fresh, along with a fresh copy of Windows 10. This is mainly to kill all the bloatware on your system. A couple of key points to make there is one, you don't want that all that bloatware, all those pre-installed applications in your system anyway. They're not probably not any applications you're ever going to use. So they're, if they're running in the background, they're using resources that, they're using memory or CPU that otherwise could be used for things that you want to use it for. So it essentially slows your system down for no good reason. More importantly, those are also potential attack vectors, right? So if you have, you buy a Windows 10 laptop, it has 10 applications installed on it, and you don't use any of them. For one, you don't know that if they're running or not. You're probably not paying attention to that. Also, you don't know if they have vulnerabilities in them already. You don't, and furthermore, applications usually get updated, right, with newer versions, and as new versions come out, at some point the older versions stop being supported by the vendor of that application or that product. Windows, for example, I think, Windows XP, of course, and I think even Windows 7 is like, and they what they do is they call it end of support and end of life. Those are two different terms. End of life means they're not developing it anymore. End of support means they're not even supporting it anymore, right? And they go through different stages where they end up hitting an EOL and an EOS. At that point, you may have some legacy application in your system or a legacy version of that application, and it's not being patched anymore, right? So there's potential to have vulnerabilities out there sitting out there that are not being resolved, right? That is a possibility. Always start, wipe your partition, start with a fresh clean copy of Windows 10. I personally like doing that. I brought this up when Lathisan was on the call, and he suggested, give me a moment while I go to my profile page and try to find that. He mentioned a very cool option. Let's see if I can find it. 23rd. Yes, SyncNex. So SyncNex. This is a tool called Windows 10 Debloater. I think that he uses it. I won't speak for him. I'm not sure if he actually recommends or suggests it, but this was an option that he shared on a fresh Windows install to run this debloat tool. It's a Windows 10 debloater. It's called SyncNex, SyncNex. You could try that out on your new system if you're not technical enough to know how to wipe your partitions and repartition it and start with a fresh new copy of Windows 10. You could just try to run that debloater tool and clean it up. Also, if for an average user, I would just recommend keeping everything updated as often as possible. There are pitfalls there too. Just to be completely clear, there's this thing called zero-day attacks. And what these is when a new version of software is released, and there's an unknown vulnerability in that software, in that new update, bad actors will find out about it and they'll take advantage of it. And then, after the awareness of it is already exposed, maybe good actors find it and they report it to the vendor. But anyway, it's where the vendor releases an unknown vulnerability in their software update and someone finds out about it. Those are zero. And then, if a bad actor takes advantage of that, that's called a zero-day attack. Updates are also very, very important because they do patch vulnerabilities constantly, right? Go look up something called CVE. So phonetically, that's Charlie Victor Echo. But if you look up a C, if you look up CVE, those are what are used to release publications on known vulnerabilities out there. You can find it for Apple, Linux, Mac, or Apple, Linux, Windows. You can even find it for Android and so forth, right? But again, for the average user, if you do not have the technical expertise, I would do two things in parallel. Start familiarizing yourself with how to manage your own updates. While you're doing that, just make sure you keep everything updated. Another easy thing to do is managing your users correctly. This applies to Linux and Windows alike. You have your administrator account for Windows. Then you also have your root account, which is the same thing as that, but for Linux. The first thing you should do is set up a user with less privileges and make that your main user. Only. Yeah. Hold on. I'm going to pause right now. I think Big Pay is going to join. Me share this with him. Yeah, hang on. I'm just paused while I'm talking to Big Pay. He may be joining. Oh, Dan L Lowell. Hey, how are you doing? Hey, man, I'm just going through a bunch of random things here about hardening. Dan, I'm not familiar with who you are. Nice to meet you. If you would like to hop up and be a part of the conversation or bring anything up, please do. This is my wide open space. I didn't get this out there soon enough. I think Big Pay is going to be hopping in maybe. Yeah, it's just here to have an open forum. I'll pick topics to talk about, security related, and if anybody has anything to share or to ask, I'm here to help them. So again, it's just kind of an open space to dedicate my time to help people and to fill in the gaps and I just have topics to talk about as well. Yeah. Anyway, I was talking about some general hardening tips, and I was starting off with Windows. Since you are here, if you prefer me to talk about Linux, maybe I can switch over to that. But if you don't request, then I'll just continue on with Linux for now, or Windows for now. I was talking about some, disk encryption notes, some things about what happens when you have a fresh copy of Windows 10 and what to do with that, and then setting up users with less privileges and not using your administrator account. Also on Linux, not using root and setting up a user on there as well, less privileges for your routine activity. There are some other little things on Windows as well when you're setting up a new system that is really annoying and easy to overlook. A couple of things that will happen when you set up Windows 10, it'll ask you for your Microsoft account. Never choose that option because that your main Microsoft account is an online account. And then what I do on there is just instead choose to sign in with a local account instead and turn off automatic logins. You don't want to sign in on your system with an online account. There is online exposure there. I just use a local account. Windows also likes to enable location tracking, and then there's another option for letting apps to use advertising IDs, which is basically providing ads based on your application activity. So if you are using Windows, go look up, go search your Windows right now for location tracking and advertising ID and turn those off because that allows Windows to know where you are and what you're doing. Yeah. Big pay. Morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, how are you?
Doing well. I really appreciate your help and support, man. It means a lot.
Yeah, no worries. I am doing a bunch of work on the laptop right now, but I wanted to set up here, bring some more people in, and work for some more security information.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, man. Yeah, Dan also, I know you've only been here for a few minutes, but and Pei, I've taken your advice. And Dan, if you're finding this is helpful, if you don't mind just sharing and spreading the word, I would greatly appreciate that. But yeah, I was just telling him about oh yeah, good point. I should probably pin
Yep, makes it
that.
easier for people to share. But I'm gonna be listening, but I'm gonna head
Yeah.
on mute, Kyle.
Okay, man. Thank you. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
But yeah, Dan. So I'll just close up on the Windows stuff with start finishing off with the average user is not using PowerShell. PowerShell is also a common concern. I work in forensics cases and ransomware cases a lot, and a lot of times PowerShell is leveraged to run what we call fileless malware, or basically executing things via scripts using PowerShell and Base64 encoding and stuff like that. But what PowerShell there, the important part here to take away is just making sure that, along with keeping everything updated, also just making sure that PowerShell is appropriately updated as well. I think 7.2 or 7.3 is out right now. But what can happen a lot of times is PowerShell versions can run in parallel, and not all of the time will the older version be removed where it should be. So, for example, a 5.x version of PowerShell can be running on your system along with a 7.x version. And one thing I mentioned earlier is how older versions of software will go end of support, where they'll stop patching them and things like that, and they'll become, even more vulnerable than they may have been before. So just make sure you're paying attention to what is installed on your system. Remove things you are not using, keeping those things cleaned up, and the things you are using, keeping them appropriately updated, right? I also always suggest people to use password managers as well. So that what a password manager is, you can look at LastPass or KeePass. Those are some of the most popular options. But imagine, if you had 60 different accounts for, crypto applications, work applications, Amazon, you got multiple email addresses. It's everybody tells you to have a complicated password and a different password for everything, but it's hard to do that. So what you do is you just use a password manager that stores all of them encrypted. Then you have that complicated password for your password manager, and that makes it a lot easier on you in a di while also improving your security. Hey, JF, welcome to the space. I'm just, this is an open forum where I just kind of dedicate an hour of my time about five times a week to help answer any questions that anybody has or to allow people to share any knowledge that they have to share for people. While that is going on, I also have topics like this week I'm talking about hardening just to, fill the time and give people some useful information. So Dan or JF, if you had anything to share or wanted to hop up, just request to speak. Also, my pinned tweet or Pe Big Page did that for me. My pinned tweet up top. If you're listening and you think this is useful and you're enjoying it, if you don't mind just resharing it and helping spread the word, I would be great. I would greatly appreciate that. Okay, so. And I know you two weren't here earlier, but just one thing I talked about in the very beginning is disk encryption and using that in encrypting your drive, right? So basically, long story short, you're welcome to go back and listen to the recording I posted on my website at epochsec.io. But again, in real short explanation, basically you're encrypting the master boot record of your system. In layman's terms, what's happening is you're encrypting that. You create a cryptographic key, and you have to authenticate to that using a passcode, which will then and only then allow your Windows operating system or your Linux operating system to load. So the benefit there is if somebody steals your drive or you lose your laptop, they would have to authenticate to that before they can even get to Windows and try to authenticate or brute force your password there. So it's just an extra layer of security. You can more or less maybe call it two-factor authentication. Yeah, I see some more people jumped up. Advocate.eth and Joe Peeps. Just like I've told Dan and JF already, this is an open space for me to just share topics. Also, just dedicating an hour of my time if anybody wants to hop up and share any knowledge to help people, or ask questions or whatever. I have an extensive cybersecurity background, and I work for BigPay here, and I'm very involved in the community. So if you have anything to share to help people, or you have any questions, just request to speak. And also if this is useful to you, again, just please reshare it. Okay, now getting into Linux. Again, a lot of a good amount of the things I said for Windows, they're all generally useful as well on Apple and Linux, as well, right? Drive encryption, managing your users, managing your software, etc. But a specific checklist I like to use for Linux, and this is not holistic. There are more things you can do for sure, but a good starting off point would be, I'll just go ahead and read off the checklist, and we'll dig into each one. Managing SSH correctly, disabling root access for SSH, changing your default password for SSH. And another comment on SSH is also turning off or disabling password login authentication. So I'll pause on that one and we'll talk about SSH for a minute. SSH is exactly like RDP for Windows, Remote Desktop Protocol, where that is a service to remote into remote systems, right? So if you have some VM sitting on DigitalOcean or AWS, you can remote into those using SSH. You can also use SCP to transfer to get or push files as well. So again, the first thing a bad actor or hacker or whatever you want to call them is going to try first is a default information, just hoping they get lucky and you didn't change that information. So they're going to try the root user first of all, and they're going to try to brute force that password, hoping that you also left password authentication enabled. They're also going to try the default port of 22. So if you've left all of that default, you've just made it that much easier on that bad actor to try to access your system. You've just given them less hurdles to overcome. Some other things would be so that's SSH in general, right? That's the first thing I do. I also go in there and create a new user. And through that new user, I will create my own cryptographic keys. You can use that. You two options for creating your private and public key pair would be RSA. I always recommend 4096 or above. I think a lot of people are starting to use ED25519 as well. It's arguably more secure, but RSA with 4096 or above is not, it doesn't make that any less secure. I like that option as well. So that's SSH. And I apologize to anybody that's heard me repeat this a dozen times already. I just want to make sure I am very clear. And while I'm rambling on, request and to speak if you want to hop up and bring up a different topic, and I'll stop rambling on about this. I'm okay with that. And if you think this is useful, I would be very appreciative of you sharing this out. Again, this is me dedicating my time to the community. crypto community in general, right? And just trying to help spread the word to build the security and safety of individuals and teams. I'm just kind of really disheartened and tired of seeing people getting compromised through scams or phishing or social engineering, things like that, right? Anyway, continuing on with my checklist on Linux, the next thing would be looking at IDS or IPS. So IDS and IPS is intrusion detection system and intrusion prevention system. Intrusion detection is really just looking for intrusions occurring on your system. You can look at things, you use things such as netstat, netstat dash tulpn. So it's netstat dash tulpn. That's an easy one to use. You can also use ss-tulpn. You can also use nmap. It's a network scanning tool, but it'll show you all of your active listening ports, associated IPs, and things like that. It'll show all of your active connections, right? So if you see something funky there that you're not expecting, somebody requested to hop up. Advocate.eth. Advocate, welcome. Welcome to the space. I think you hopped up. Maybe you didn't. Oh, I could go ahead and invite. Hey, welcome to the space.
I have a question.
Sure.
Actually, I'm not too knowledgeable about all these. I think you might want to mute your mic. I can hear myself talking.
Let me mute.
Okay. Epoch, actually, I'm not too familiar with these technologies, but I'm very interested as a lawyer. I am a lawyer by profession. And there's something which, you know, the tech guy, he helped to set up a FileZilla server for my computer to connect with the Office printer. It's an all-in-one. So I was curious if that would open up my Office computers to being hacked. I mean, because it's running a server, and but it's necessary to run that program to access the printer, and it's a Windows desktop. But we do run, you know, Linux computers as well. It's just that the one which I use is a Windows desktop. Have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, sure. So if I understood you correctly, and my apologies, Advocate, but I think you were asking, so basically you're saying that you have your desktop at home and you connect to your system at work in order to access a printer, right? So
not
is
really.
That correct?
It's my office, and I own an office. I own a law office. So a guy came, he set up the printer. We rent a printer, and you know, it's network connected, and all the desktops which want to connect to this printer, they have to run FileZilla server. So I was curious, would that open up my computers to being attacked?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, years and years ago, I would say that would have been more common. So print spool. So printers use, and Windows uses a service called print spool. Right. You can find that if you go to your task manager. That could be that. So any service running on your system is technically an attack vector for a bad actor. Now, if you're running that in your office, if you have your, you know, you do, you know, it's okay to have your printer connected to your network. I would say it's not. You're not really that vulnerable from that perspective. I would just make sure some things I mentioned earlier about, you know, your printer will come with software that's installed on your Windows desktop. I would just make sure with everything else that you're routinely, you know, every now and then checking to see if there's any updates for your printer software specifically. Like if you have an HP, just Google HP, whatever the version, whatever the name of your printer is, and see if there's any software updates. You can also just open an application, and most of the times it should tell you if there's an update to have. Because there could be any application out there that you're running could technically have a vulnerability in it, right? And and vendors and software vendors routinely update these vulnerabilities to patch them. So I would just keep make sure you're up to date on that. And you know, having your printer on your network is not a concern. It's more just making sure that your Windows desktop and what you're doing is safe. You know, making sure that the printer isn't accessible outside of your network. You know, whoever set up your printer, if they're also your network administrator or your IT person, just making sure that they have your firewall set up correctly, right? You don't want, you know, whatever port your printer is using, you don't want it exposed outside of your network, right? So you'll use a firewall to prevent traffic in or out of your network. Right. So internal to your network, your printer is totally fine. Just one thing, you know, just making sure that things like the printer port or whatever else you're using isn't accessible in or out of your network. That would help improve your security, as well as just the common things that you would do on Windows. Right. I would just, and I'm getting out of your question. I'm spreading outside of your question here. But some of the things I mentioned earlier about making sure that your system is encrypted. Because if you leave your office and someone breaks in, they bypass your physical security of your office and they steal your desktop, then, you know, they could have access to your drive of your computer. So just make sure you have disk encryption installed. Making sure that you aren't using your full-blown administrator account for everything. Have your IT person or yourself set up an additional user with less privileges. It's perfectly fine to have, you know, I recommend having basic antivirus and your local Windows firewall and things like that enabled. and things like that. So, Advocate, does that help?
Oh, yes. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Epoch. I have been wondering, and I think you cleared up the doubts. And basically, I think I just need to keep my software updated and you know, common sense stuff. But it's also a bit technical as well. So I'll try my best. I'll listen back to the parts which I missed.
Yeah, sure. And two comments. One is also whoever your IT person is, or if you don't have an IT person, find an IT person and just have them check your firewall, right? Your network firewall, making sure that, you know, the right, you know, what you really want to do is being in a law office, you probably just need very limited access. I would use your own personal device for common internet browsing, internet activity, and just using, you know, and having a separate network in your office for just that, right? What an IT person can do is they can create a VLAN in your office. It's called a virtual LAN. And then you can have two different networks in the exact same spot. One is used for all your personal stuff, and then one is used for all of your official business, right? And just making sure that they also check your firewall. So doing things like that. Advocate also, I am Epoch, but the other account on here called Holy Macaroni, that is my main account. So if you want to follow that account, you don't have to, but if you want to check Holy Macaroni out, that's me. I have my pinned tweet that shows my website, which is epochsec.io. So if you ever wanted to set up a personal call with me or something to talk about, ask more personal or individual questions, you can go to my epochsec.io website and just click my calendar and pick a time if you want to, right? I see somebody else requested. Let me grab them up. Dan Lowo, if I am saying that correctly. Hi, Dan. Welcome. Dan, it looks like something happened there. Let me try to invite you and see if that works.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dan. Yes.
Yeah, all right. So just like you're saying about an advocate issue, I think one important thing else concerning software is to make sure that for the printer, you are installing the driver directly from him. HP or in whatever vendor in the printer is from. So what most people use is that they install a modified driver whereby they can have exploits in the driver itself. Just make sure that your driver is coming from the vendor's website and specifically, not just any random driver you see online. And I think that's one way to ensure that you won't be compromised through your printer servers and stuff like that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that is a great point, Advocate. That Dan, thank you for that. That he just mentioned, right? Your print, any device that you connect to your system comes with what you call a driver. And just like Dan was saying, for one, make sure that driver is installed. Make sure you're updating your drivers, and also making sure that you, and something that I always say, and Dan said it, so credit to Dan, is going to the source for that thing, right? So in your specific example, if you have an HP printer, going to the HP website, which is the source, and getting your driver and your driver updates from there. Do not get it from a third-party website. Don't get it from a link from somebody that sent it to you, nothing like that. Always go to the source for everything. That's always my suggestion. So, Dan, thanks for bringing that up. Since you guys are up here, do you guys have any other questions or anything to share? If not, I can continue going through my Linux list here.
And just one more question, please. You spoke about using password managers. So I'm wondering, what do you think about a Google default password manager that comes with Chrome browser? Do you think that that's secure in terms of not being compromised, or we should go with other softwares like I think we have quite a lot of password managers. So what do you think about the Google manager itself, and do you have any recommendations on which one is secure and better? Thank you.
Yeah, so before I answer that question, I'm trying to look for something that I had written down. Give me just a minute and I will answer that. Let's see. Okay, so yeah, so and Dan, I'm going to answer a question. If I answer it incorrectly or I heard you wrong, just interrupt me. But I think you were asking about like the Google password manager, right, on your Chrome browser. That's also a thing on Brave as well, right? Brave, if I'm saying this correctly, is like it's its own web browser, and I always prefer Brave, but you can also sign in your Google account, and it works just like Chrome does, right? But first of all, I do not recommend ever using the Google Password Manager in the Chrome browser. So, like, for example, if you sign in with your email address, bob@gmail.com on Chrome, and then you sync that with all of your other devices, maybe your mobile phone and maybe your other laptop. I can't say not to do it, but the easiest recommendation I can give is just do not use that. Do not ever sign in with your Gmail account or whatever on your browser. Do not ever save your passwords. Do not use the Google Password Manager. The reason being is that if somebody gains access to your system, something like that, then they can access your browser settings and they can get, you know, they can get those. No, there are files sitting on your system with this information. They can gain that and take advantage of that. I always recommend using software password managers. There's also hardware options out there. I forget what I can't remember a good hardware password manager option out there to recommend to you, but just know that you can look up hardware password managers. But for software, I would recommend LastPass. You can also look at KeyPass. Those are the two most commonly used ones out there. LastPass is probably the most popular one. Two or three other options that I think are free, or at least cheaper, would be 1Password, Bitwarden, or Dashlane. Those are three other options that I have not used, but I have to some degree heard of other people using them. I live in a very small country town. My feed store guy, I helped him set up Bitwarden, because that is just, that is a free and very easy one to use, and he's not very technical at all, right? So I helped him set that up. But again, I'd never save anything. Never use the password manager in your browsers. Always use a software version like LastPass, KeyPass, Dashlane, Bitwarden, 1Pass. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Dan. And just like I mentioned, Advocate, you are welcome to reach out to me. My Holy Macaroni is my main account. You can go there, ping me, or you can go to my website, epochsec.io, if you ever want to. If you're setting that stuff up and you're just not sure what you're doing, you're welcome to reach out to me, and I can try to give you some guidance. Ramadan, I see you hopped on. Thanks for joining. Apologies to the other people that have already heard this about 12 times, but I have a cybersecurity community support project where I just open up an hour of my time a few times a week to help people out and answer questions or have conversations security related. I have an extensive cybersecurity background, blah, blah, blah. That's why I'm here to do that. But anyway, if this is helpful for you, please reshare it out there and spread the word. And then Ramadan, since you just joined, if you want, you're welcome to request to speak if you have anything to ask or share. I'll probably keep this going for another 10 or 15 minutes. Or if anybody asks anything, I can keep on going. But in lieu of that, I'll just keep on talking, going through my checklist items for Linux. Another thing you can do is use something called SE Linux. SE Linux is an application on Linux to control access. So RBAC is a term to consider, role-based access control. You can create multiple users on your system just for you, right? You can have root that does everything. Then you can have Bob that does limited things. And through SE Linux, you can also use that to control the access for those accounts. You can also do rule-based access to control access to ports, processes, files, and directories. And then also externally, you know, routinely externally scanning your system for vulnerabilities. This is for all operating systems. For Windows, I would look at a tool called Sysinternals. For a fun piece of knowledge, it was created in 1996 by a guy named Mark Rusinovich. You do get Sysinternals directly from Microsoft, but what Sysinternals for Windows is, it will scan. It's a process scanner. It scans your services. It scans and monitors logon sessions, port monitoring. There's also a tool in Sysinternals called PS, and it has a myriad of tools within PS, like PS Info. It can pull up all sorts of system information. PS Ping, so you can test pinging your system, ICMP, PS Kill, and PS Exec, which are some administrative tools to kill processes or execute things. But I would look at Sysinternals. Now for Linux, I'll go through something here. This will get more in depth. But first of all, generally, if you have a Linux system, you're looking how to test your system for vulnerabilities, or knowing if your system is secure, or just in general having more knowledge about things that are working on your system, you can look at something called Kali Linux. Kali Linux is a version of Linux that is basically for penetration testing. It has all sorts of tools in there to do all sorts of different things to your system to test it out. I always recommend Kali Linux to people because it will give you the most exposure and the most things to look at to go research and learn more about. Even if you don't end up knowing how to use Kali Linux more and then all of the tools built into it, that's okay. At least at the bare minimum, you'll get some knowledge out of that on how things are actually happening on your system. So you'll have a little more understanding on the things that you need to be concerned about. One recommendation is to go to Linode, Linode. that is a just a yet another cloud service provider that you can spin up VMs from. Like, it's just like AWS or DigitalOcean or Azure, but they have an image on there for Kali Linux that you just basically click a button and it builds the system for you, so you don't have to worry about that part of it. I'm not endorsing them or anything like that. It's just an option. Furthermore, you might. I was listening to I listened to a guy on YouTube called Network Chuck. I would really suggest checking that guy out. I love listening to him. But he talks about Linode and Kali Linux. But he also I was also watching a video from him not long ago where he was talking about DDoS and DOS protection. So DOS and DDoS is denial of service and distributed denial of service. Basically, in layman's terms, it's someone trying to bring down your stuff, your system, your application, your website, right? Things like that. So what they'll do is they'll try to ping flood, right? So ICMP, ICMP flooding, they'll try HTTP flooding, they'll try UDP flooding. They'll try these different ports and protocols to try to flood your system with activity to overwhelm it, to bring it down. This happens a lot to applications or teams building websites, right? It's a very common thing for people to try to bring down a website. But some things you can do to test your system out or protect it in lieu of Kali Linux and other options, he was talking about using these tools out there to test for DOS or DDoS. One of them being HPing3 and Sapphira. Again, that's Network Chuck that I learned this from. But basically, Sapphira and HPing3 are tools to try to ping your system with a bunch of traffic to see if you can bring it down. Also, if you're looking to try a distributed denial service along with those tools, you can go to something called byob.dev or build your own botnet. I will add a disclaimer that these tools are very powerful, and I would only use them on your stuff. I would not try to use them on somebody else's application, website, etc. If you bring it down or you do hit their stuff, I mean, you can actually be held legally liable for that, so don't do that. Just use it for your own personal testing or your own team testing. But go check out those tools if you're interested in digging more into them, or listen to that guy, Network Chuck, if you want to better understand them. I'm not going to go through it. I will not do it. I will not do it justice. But yeah, so those are some, just a lot of different options you could do from Windows and Linux, and just general OS hardening as well as hardware hardening as well. You could go to my website, epochsec.io. My project is going for 1 year until October 31st of next year. I dedicate about 5 hours of my time a week to run these spaces. Also, you can set up a meeting with me on epochsec.io/contact. All of these Twitter spaces or any documents I create are also on my website as well, on the information feed page. I try to make that website as very basic as I could because I'm not a web developer, and I also want it to be easy for people to find stuff. So again, I'll do a different topic every week. I think next week I'm going to talk about, just kind of help people understand what it's like to go through a ransomware case or a forensics case. I thought that might be entertaining to share with people, as well as giving some tips to kind of mentor people on getting into cybersecurity if they're looking to do that, or just building their knowledge. Victor, I see you just joined up as well. So you heard my rant. Everybody else has heard it a handful of times. But if you have any questions or if you have any things to share or anything, please hop up and let me know. Welcome, Mitchell, as well. People keep joining at random times, so I apologize to anybody. I really do. But, Mitchell, I just explained the spiel to Victor as well. This is just an open security forum for anybody to share knowledge or ask questions or anything. I'm here to provide my guidance on my extensive cybersecurity background. I do plan on closing this space up soon, but if you have anything to bring up, I'll keep it ongoing and we'll have that conversation. So in the next minute or two, if you do want to hop up and bring anything up, just request to speak and I'll bring you up. If you don't want to do that, if you do share out my pinned tweet, or if you follow Holy Macaroni, which is my main account, I do have my Holy Macaroni account on here. Follow that account. Go to my website at epochsec.io. Reshare my pinned tweet on Holy Macaroni if you don't mind, whatever. But again, I'm really just trying to provide my time and services to everybody for free. I was funded through Catalyst, but I'm not charging any team or any individual, so it's just free services to you. I'm just tired of seeing people getting compromised and losing their funds or losing access, getting, you know, all sorts of bad things. I'm just trying to help people out. So yeah. I'll pause for just a minute and see if anybody wants to bring anything up. And while I'm giving you a minute to think here, I'll go through my list and see if I have anything else to share. Oh yeah, one other thing on Linux is UFW. So using a firewall on Windows and Linux, right? So there's two different styles of firewalls. One is host firewall and one is a network firewall. You should have a firewall at your home. If you have a router along with a firewall, that would be great. If you know, you can have a firewall in your office. If you're running a website, have a firewall for that. You know, AWS has its own firewalls, but you know, if you're using something else, you can leverage Cloudflare. Cloudflare is a great online firewall service. But also having a firewall on your local system. So the Windows firewall, of course. But for Linux, there's a wonderfully super duper easy tool on Linux called UFW. You know, it's just really great. It's really easy to use. I always suggest using UFW. I use it. If you're using Linux to run a certain application and that's the only thing you're doing, I recommend setting up UFW, such as whitelisting method, right? So set up a block all rule by default, and then create rules below that to only allow your application and the ports it needs, right? If you're using Linux for your own personal usage, you'll need a lot more ports and protocols and things available. So you can approach that in a blacklisting method to where you allow things, but you blacklist certain things to improve your security. Along with that would be a tool called fail to ban. Fail to ban is essentially an IPS. It's looking basically fail to ban is looking for a whole bunch of, you know, if someone tries a DDoS on your system, for example, and is seeing a bunch of suspicious traffic, it'll automatically block those IP addresses, put them in a file. You can review it. You can release those ISPs if you want. But again, a fail to ban and UFW are two great options to, matter of fact, you should always use them. But yeah. I think I've covered everything else. If you're on Linux, Windows is a little different, but Linux, if you're running for all of the services running on your system, all of the logging is done through systemctl, or you can look up, your systemctl, right, is where all your services are, but all the logging is through journalctl. So you can use journalctl to review all the logs for your services. Also, LogWatch is apparently a better version for log monitoring as well. So I would suggest looking into those two things. I would always be monitoring activity on your systems, maybe using system terminals on Windows, like I mentioned, or LogWatch or journalctl on Linux, right? Or Snort, right? Snort is a great intrusion detection tool as well on Linux. So that's another thing to look at. I think that I have gone through everything. Again, next week unless I change my mind on a different topic, I'll be going through, scenarios on what it's like to, if somebody is curious about what happens during ransomware cases and forensics cases for enterprise companies. Like you hear about these oil companies and bank companies getting ransomware. I do work with those cases a lot, so I will walk people through those and what it looks like. I'll also be giving some tips and mentoring guidance on how to get into cybersecurity or start off with it if you're interested in that. If you are, for like the 27th time I've said on this recording, go to follow me on Holy Macaroni. That is my main account. I have epochsec.io specifically only for sharing these spaces and tracking that. So you can do that, or you can go to my website, epochsec.io. Again, I do thank everybody for listening in and for the couple of questions that Advocate and Dan had. If you guys do have anything else as I'm kind of closing up here, just feel free to interrupt me. But otherwise, you know, I hope everybody has a great Sunday. Please DM me however you want. I'm on, you know, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, I can give you my Discord information, my Telegram information, however you like to communicate. Just let me know and I will take time out of my day to help you out. Anyway, yeah, I hope everybody has a wonderful Sunday. Pei, I appreciate you, man. I think you're probably still going to be on mute, but I appreciate you hopping in and helping spread the word as always. It's very appreciative, and thank you everybody as well on the call. Take care.